Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I've signed and I've stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So you could just see $600,000
deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. Mm-hmm. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you're going to jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government, plus I had to pay my current taxes. I couldn't get behind on nothing, and I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. Mm. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. Is who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven, the radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it, just go ahead. So he kept walking, And Master Ronnie saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cat. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
What's up, guys? This is Alex Martin. This is the Content Creator Podcast, where I stimulate your mind and show you how to market your grind. And today, we're going to stimulate your mind. I got the legend, the icon, Freeway Rick Ross. How you doing today, bro?
I'm good. How you?
Good, bro. Can't complain.
No doubt.
I can't lie, man. Right now, I'm like I got the jitters, you know. Because
I see you geeked.
Yeah, I'm excited. Thanks, man. And first, I want to say thank you. Like, you didn't have to come here, and yet you did it, man. So I appreciate it.
Oh, come on, man. This is how I do. You know, everybody's important.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's movement is important. Even if it's not important to me, it's important to them. And if I don't respect your movement, you shouldn't respect mine. So
you're big on respect.
Absolutely.
Like, that's one of the things, like, when I did my research, you know, one of the things that you said was you just, like, want to respect everybody. You don't want no enemies.
No, I don't.
Where did that start?
I don't know. You know, my mom was always kind of, like, open, you know. Like, my house was the place everybody played basketball in my backyard, and we played football on the side of the street, and you know, we had food, everybody could eat, you know, at our house. So it was kind of like an open society, you know what I'm saying, and a loving environment, even though, you know, sometimes it was chaotic as well. But I guess I got it, you know, from being around my mom with that kind of open openness, you know, the willing to accept other people. And sometimes, even if you don't agree with, you know, their philosophies, you know, it was still okay to be friends.
Yeah, nah, that's real. That's one of the things I felt like the older generation, like, y'all are better at, because y'all could disagree to agree on certain issues.
Yeah, yeah.
Our generation, man, they be on some bullshit.
Well, now they want to kill you if they don't like what you say. You know, I don't like what you say. I don't like what you wear. You know, I'm gonna kill you.
Yeah.
So definitely a different time.
Speaking of which, I saw you take a picture with Mike Bloomberg. Politics is mainly where that happens. So what's up with that?
Well, you know, it was interesting, and I caught a lot of slack behind it off my social media. And you know, I tell my people that you know, I don't work for nobody.
Yeah.
You know, I never had a job. So I don't really know what it's like to have to take orders from anybody, and I kind of make my own mind up. You know, I do my own study, my own analyzation, and I'll take other people's opinion, and I'll even chop it up with you about the situation, you know. But at the end of the day, I'm gonna go with what I believe, even if I have to take the lick, you know. Okay, I was wrong. Yeah. Spank my ass, you know.
Accountability,
you know. So. I got a call, you know, from the mayor of Compton, and she was like, Bloomberg is going to be in town. Would you like to meet him? And, you know, all I do is listen to the news. You know, I don't really listen to hip-hop or the radio. You know, my station is always tuned to the news, because every now and then they'll drop a jewel that'll throw you out front. You know what I'm saying? I like to hear the people come on, the experts, and talk about, you know, just like the coronavirus. I've been really keeping up with that.
I'm going to the afterward.
Okay.
They got something against us.
And she called me and she was like, Mike Bloomberg is going to be in Compton. I was like, Compton? This dude is worth $58 billion and he's going to be in Compton?
Yeah.
You know, some of our stars never come to Compton. You know, I think the last time Dr. Dre was in Compton is when they were shooting Straight out of Compton, when the incident happened with Suge. You know, that's how often they come to Compton.
And that's 2020, and that's probably 2013. No, 2014 maybe.
That was
a long time ago, though.
It was a while.
Yeah. So you got a billionaire coming.
So what I'm saying is that people don't come to Compton.
Yeah.
They don't come to L.A., South Central. We just don't see those guys. Hear Mike Bloomberg, he's in Compton, you know, he's walking the streets, you know, like the same guy that I listened to on the radio was talking about, oh, I'm going to put money into the black community. I want to know, are you telling the truth?
Yeah.
Are you really going to put money in South Central? And if you are, I'm the one that you should be going through. You know, you should be talking to me about putting money into my community, because a lot of times they put money in, but they give it to the wrong people.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny you say that. I've worked with people with the same mindset as you. Independent, be your own boss. We don't allow no Red Cross, no nothing. in between.
Why should we?
Yeah.
When the people are saying that they want to do it, why shouldn't we go out and let them do it with us?
Yeah.
Somebody that the community trusts.
Right.
Somebody who loves the community. I really love South Central.
Yeah.
You know, I love my people.
Yeah.
You know, I love all my followers on social media. You know, I guarantee you, you know, not one of them will ever tell you that they came up to me and told me that they follow me and I didn't, you know, give them a brother hug and,
yeah.
You know, we go eat dinner together.
Yeah.
You know, they go to the arenas with me.
Yeah.
Cause I don't feel that it's big me, little you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's humble, man.
I feel that we all equal and we all deserve the same amount of respect.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, and I understood the frisking search. You know, can nobody can really talk about it more than I can.
Yeah.
I got the scars in my face that prove police brutality. All of this is from police brutality.
Yeah.
All these scars. You know. Nobody on the street do that.
Yeah.
Police did that while I was handcuffed. So when you're talking about police brutality, I know police brutality too well. Matter of fact, I'm going to court right now. I was sitting in my car about 4 months ago. Me and my son were sitting in the car. One of my friends had came in, and he got one of those tickets where they give you the hotel and the car. You know how you buy those tickets online, and you don't know where your hotel is.
Yeah. It's like the app, too, nowadays. You got
so, man, he got this hotel,
yeah.
And when we pulled up, I was like, wow. You know, this looked like one of them spots.
No, really?
Yeah, but it was, you know, I mean, it was... But anyway, he goes to check in. I'm parking in the loading zone, and the cop pulls in with his lights out, and I swear it was people all over the place. And this cop pulled right up to my car.
Out of all the cars.
Out of all the cars, all the people walking.
Yeah.
He pulled right up to us. And he walked up to my window and he asked me for my ID. I gave him my ID and my registration, insurance, everything, you know, because I'm straight. You know, I'm an auto dealer. And he was complaining about the car didn't have a plate on the front. So I said, oh, well, I'm a dealer and I got a dealer plate on the back.
Yeah.
So my car don't have to have a plate on it, don't have to be registered or nothing.
Yeah.
Here's my WIC card for the auction. And he takes it and he runs it. And then his partner comes over to my son and he's like, you on probation or parole? And my son was like, yeah. And instantly everything changed. It was like, get out of the car. And I'm like, hold up. Y'all got the right to demand him out, but you can't demand me out because I'm not on parole.
Yeah.
No, you get out of the car too, put his hand on his pistol. So I got out of the car, you know, because I know they will shoot us.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
We know incidents that people have done nothing but wearing a hoodie, and I did have on a hoodie.
Yeah.
You know, I keep my hoodie on.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got out the car, and after I got out the car, he asked me to sit on the ground. I'm like, I don't sit on the ground unless I want to sit on the ground. I don't want to sit on the ground tonight,
yeah.
You know. He said, if you don't sit on the ground, I'm gonna take you to jail. And I said, well, you're gonna have to take me to jail because you might take me down, but I ain't sitting down.
Yeah.
And when I said that, that's exactly what he did. He took me down.
So he hit you with like evading arrest, or
he charged me with obstruct. I'm charged right now. I'm going to court right now.
Yeah.
With obstructing an investigation and resisting arrest. So when you're talking about police brutality, I know it firsthand. I have my own task force, and these guys, 35 got suspended. I think 6 or 7 went to prison, you know, for civil rights violations, stealing money, planting drugs, lying on the witness stand, fabricating search warrants. So when you talk about corruption with police, I knew it firsthand. I testified against those cops, you know, that one night they planted drugs on me, you know, they planted drugs on my girlfriend, my mom, they planted a gun at my mom's daycare center. Just to take her license,
yeah.
This tactics to cause you financial heartache,
yeah.
Is what they were doing. So when you talk about police brutality, I know it firsthand. But I also understand that everybody deserves a second chance. You know, we've all made mistakes. You know, I'm no longer a crack dealer, and I know that selling crack was probably one of the worst things I ever did before in my life.
Yeah.
And I've done quite a few things. You know, I'm not a saint. But selling crack may have been the worst thing that I ever did, and the least thing that I'm fond that I've done in my life. Even though that gave me my notoriety, my fame, and all that, I know that so many other people suffered from me being able to drive a car with a nice paint job, or have wheels on it, or drive some, have some nice clothes, or have a house. Somebody else's kid probably went hungry because the mom had spent the food stamps or whatever in order to facilitate this high. And I'm asking people to give me a second chance, you know. So if I want a second chance, shouldn't I allow other people to have a second chance?
For sure. And like that's in a way, like that's avoidance, because we all hypocrites in our own right. But it's like when you're mindful of it, I feel like self-awareness, I feel like that helps out a lot to where you just like, you know, where you just a second chance. For me, it's like being open to other people's opinions. It's like, you know, if I disagree with you, I don't have to, you know, like I don't have to be in my feelings about that shit.
Yeah, you know? Don't have to crucify them.
Yeah,
you know.
That's from it, like, oh, you got their point of view. That's that. Let it live.
Right.
So how did the meeting go with Mike Bloomberg?
Well, we just met briefly that day. I'm hoping that that the dialogue will continue.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know where it's gonna go, but at the end of the day, I think that we all should hold him accountable for his words, and we shouldn't just, you know, throw up our hands and say, oh no, I don't want no parts of that. Because one of the things that I like about what he said is that at least he's saying he's gonna do something for the black community.
Yeah, for sure.
No other president has ever said, I'm going to do this specifically for the black community.
Yeah.
Hasn't been done. Obama didn't do it.
Yeah.
Obama never said that he was going to do anything for the black community.
Yeah, yeah.
And we love Obama.
Yeah.
You know, we put him in presidency. But he never once committed a certain thing to the black community.
Yeah.
And for Bloomberg to at least say it, maybe he won't do it. I'm not saying that he's gonna do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I never said that.
Yeah.
But I'm saying at least he said that he wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And that he's going to do it. So with that, to me, is a step ahead of everybody else.
Nah, I can feel that, Dan. So if people on social media, y'all need to chill in the comment section. I've seen the comments. Y'all need to chill. Take a break.
Well, you know what? And they have the right to voice their opinion.
Sure, sure.
But what I would like for them to do is not only make an opinion, but also do the research to go with your opinion. Because now if you're basing your opinion on non-facts, then it's just an opinion.
Yeah.
And opinions don't really mean much without the research and the facts to go behind it. So I would prefer for my people to do the research. And then on top of that, let's hold him accountable, because
yeah.
he may win the presidency. You know, I think they say he spent already $170 million,
yeah.
More than everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And Trump can't keep up with him, because you know, he say Trump ain't a real billionaire.
Yeah, yeah. He's what was it? He's talking to him about the Twitter deal.
Yeah.
Twitter exchange that they had, and you know, they asked him, and he said, you know, do you think it's fair? I'm paraphrasing. You know, do you think it's right to argue in public with, you know, for kids to see two billionaires arguing in public? And he went, who's the other billionaire?
Well, you know, he's not the only one that said Trump is not a billionaire.
Yeah,
you know, my guy that owns Virgin Records, I can't think of his name right now,
Richard Branson.
Richard Branson also said that he's not a billionaire, and he makes billionaires look bad.
Yo, I like that. Speaking of billionaire status, as you move, you know, and I'm structuring it the right way, you were considered a billionaire at one point in time.
Yeah, some people say that.
Yeah. How was that, like, when you were, like, in that time period?
Well, you know what, when I was selling cocaine, I loved it.
Yeah.
You know, I was willing to die for it, kill for it. But I was lost, you know what I'm saying? I wasn't in my right mind, because had I been in my right mind, I could have taken what I had and not only set myself up, but so many other people.
Were you like ever like counting like how much money was coming in? Because I know for me personally, like I set a number for me. At one point in my life, I want to make $50 million. I don't know how it's gonna happen. I hope that it's tech. So, like, was there ever a number like growing up?
My number will change. You know, when I first started selling drugs, I wanted to make
$5,000. Really?
That was my goal. I just wanted to put some wheels on my car, yeah. Get my car painted, and I was going to be good with that.
So did you always have the entrepreneurial mindset?
I guess I always did, but I didn't really know what an entrepreneur was.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in a poor house, you know, single family, you know, only the moms. And my mom knew nothing about business, you know. She didn't know about structuring a business, how to start a business. But, you know, even when I was a kid, I used to organize car washes with all my friends. I would cut the grass. I used to hustle bottles, cans. So I guess I've always had the entrepreneur skill, but I never knew how to channel those energies into what I eventually learned how to channel it into.
So now you're doing the marijuana industry.
Yes, I'm going to be the king of marijuana. I plan on being the biggest marijuana dealer in the whole country. That's my goal. I don't have a number of how much money I want to make. I don't even care about the money.
Yeah.
I just want to be the biggest.
Yeah.
I just want to dominate the industry.
Yeah.
I want my brand to be the biggest brand in the industry.
Yeah. And it's LA Kingpins, right?
Yeah, LA Kingpin.
Yeah. How long you had this going, you know? And what made you even jump into the industry?
It was a long story, man. I just got off parole, and I wasn't doing well financially. I was getting eviction notices on my door because I was paying half my rent and couldn't pay the other half. And sometimes I'd be $200 short, and sometimes I'd be $700 short, and I just wasn't in a space that I wanted to be in, you know, financially. And one of my guys came by, you know, to celebrate with me the day I got off parole. And a white guy out of Ohio named Matt. He's a stoner. He's a real stoner.
Okay.
I'm talking about a real stoner. When you see stoner, he's a real stoner. So he came by and he was like, man, I'm going to San Bernardino to the High Times event. You ought to ride with me. You all parole, come and celebrate, smoke a joint. And I was like, man, I ain't smoking no weed. And because I hadn't smoked weed since the early 80s, you know.
And so, what year is this that you get off parole?
I got off in, I don't even remember what year it was. Probably like, let me see, I did 6 years on paper, so it would have been 09, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14,
okay.
15 maybe, 14, 15.
Okay.
So he talks me into going to the event with him. He's like, man, I bet you'll sell a lot of books out there.
Yeah.
And so I went and grabbed 6 boxes of books, like 200 books, and we headed out, man.
Yeah.
And just like he said, I didn't even get in the gate, and they started buying them books. Man, Rick Ross, man, we love you. Thank you for all you did for us, for your sacrifice. And basically they were saying that with me exposing the CIA's actions and the cocaine also helped make marijuana legal in California. So they just showed me so much love, man. It was like this new environment that I never saw before. I never saw people with like trash bags of marijuana, big jars of marijuana like this big, just sitting on the table in the open, and then the cops are walking by protecting it, and people are smoking weed, and man, they was giving me like, I was tripping, right, because I don't even know that I'm going, but then there's people here like, man, I made this popsicle for you, it's vegan. I made this sucker for you, it's vegan. I made this candy bar for you, it's vegan. And I was like, wow, this is the kind of love I'm gonna get. So they bought all the books, so I didn't have to carry no boxes outside. I had a big wad of money. And man, dudes was coming up with money, wads of money like this, like we used to have when we sold cocaine. And I was like, man, I want some of this.
I can feel that.
So when I went home that night, I called my brothers, and I was like, man, y'all didn't tell me about this, man. Because at that time, what I noticed, I had never even noticed that it was a marijuana industry.
Yeah.
You know, because I was kind of like, you know, it's kind of like when your eternal vision, and my vision was to get off parole because I had a PO from hell. This guy was trying to send me back for everything. So I know what I had done is I had done just what I was supposed to do to get off parole. And I also kind of felt like, you know, getting into marijuana would be a stepping stone of me going back to selling cocaine. But then what I realized is that I had already committed to myself that I was never going to sell cocaine again, so I didn't have to worry about that. You know, that was already established. Yeah, that's over with. So no matter what happens, you're not going back. But then I was like, it's legal. Rick, it's legal, Rick. You can get a license. You're going to have a permit. You know, you get to ride around with the paperwork. So I jumped in, man. I started with $500. And I did pretty good. I did pretty good. I got up to... they stopped me on the highway one day. I was going up to the mountains to buy marijuana. And they stopped me. I had $105,000 in the car. The police took my money. But I started to do really, really well in the industry. I saw the similarities between the marijuana and my skills that I use in the cocaine business.
Yeah. So if you had to give advice to people right now, like mindset-wise, what would it be as far as like applying it to the industry?
Well, with any business that you go into, you want to be focused. You know, you want to have tunnel vision. At least during the time that you're doing whatever it is that you're trying to do. You know, you want to be focused right into that. You don't want to... I mean, let's use boxing, for instance, because, you know, I'm working with... As a matter of fact, we got a fighter fighting tonight. Saul Rodriguez is one of my guys. I've been working with Saul since he was 16. I went to a fight, and he was 16 years old. He came up to me, and he was like, man, you should be managing me. I'm going to be the champ. And I was like, this little boy, get out of here. And here I am now in Dallas. He's the main event tonight. But you have to really be focused on whatever it is you're going to do, because if you don't want to be the best, then you just want to be mediocre.
Right.
And if you're mediocre, you're going to get mediocre pay. But if you're great, you know, why? I just do so much studying. You know, I study like Michael Jordan. Why was Michael Jordan getting $45 million a year? And then they got another guy who's only getting $500,000.
Right.
Was this guy... Was Michael that much better than this guy that he should get what?
45.
That's what, 100 times more
more
money than this other guy. So what was the difference? Well, skill set, but Michael focused on what he was doing. This other guy probably was playing around, you know, last one to practice, first one to leave, you know, slacking on all of his workouts, you know, wouldn't do his shoot arounds like he's supposed to. And that's usually, you know, people say, oh, well, they get talent. Well, my teacher says that the talented guys are always first to practice and the last to leave. So maybe work ethic and talent goes together. You know what I'm saying? Maybe there's something that can't be separated. You know, because I hear people all the time arguing, you know, oh, well, he's just a natural. Well, somebody what I would call a natural is a guy who never picked up a ball before and comes on the court and totally dominates. I never saw that before.
Nah, this is fact. They talking about LeBron and how much he invests in his body. And, you know, it's, at least they say it, like millions he spends on his body. But, you know, the guys like that, they put that time in. You know, even like listening to you talk earlier, you do your research.
You have to do your research.
Yeah.
I mean, without research and without knowledge,
and applying it,
you're going to suffer.
Yeah.
You know?
And I had struggled with that for so long, man. It, like, literally, I'd be a big reader, but I wouldn't apply it.
Yeah, you gotta apply it. You know, in one of my most favorite articles, in LA Magazine, they did an article on me, and it's called Rick Ross is Dreaming. You gotta read that article one day. I was in prison with a life sentence, and the guy comes up and visits me.
Yes.
And he's talking about me reading these books, this Get Rich. I mean, I really didn't have no option. I had a life sentence without the possibility of parole. They tell me I'm never going home again.
Yeah.
And I start reading these books, and he calls them the Get Rich Quick genre. You know, what the mind of a man can believe, the body can achieve.
Yeah.
And he said that I was testing out their plausibility. And you know, I didn't know what plausibility meant.
Yeah.
So I went and looked it up in the dictionary. And plausibility means that I was checking to see if they really worked. And that's what happens with us. We don't check the plausibility. We just take our opinion and run with it. I believe that everything that we do, everything that we hear, should be tested. One of my favorite books, Think and Grow Rich, he talks about having an open mind.
Yeah.
You know, can you open your mind up to accept new things? He asked me a question one day. I read the book like 25 times,
yeah,
too.
That, and then I know The Richest Man in Babylon.
It's another one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you're big into the Get Rich Quick book. You know,
well, I don't really figure that. I don't even think they Get Rich Quick books,
because
they don't talk about that you're going to get rich quick overnight. You know,
it's really about the mindset.
The mindset,
yeah.
the dedication, the sacrifice, the burning desire, all those things play a big part in becoming successful. And so often people think that when they see somebody like a Michael Bloomberg that he was lucky.
Yeah.
You know, now a Donald Trump, whose daddy and granddaddy was rich, is a different story.
Yeah.
But that's why he's been jacking off all their money.
Yeah.
You know, they say he lost more money than anybody in the...
Bankrupt
twice. I think last year they say he lost $800 million or something of other people's money.
Yeah, see, that's crazy. And, you know, that's another thing, too, man. I hear a lot of guys preaching, and, like, I can't really speak on it because I haven't applied it yet. But, like, the whole use other people's money.
Oh, I love it.
You hear it?
Yeah, I love that.
Okay.
But I took it a step further.
Okay. Talk about it.
See, when I was in prison, that's what they talked about, using other people's money.
Okay.
So I was like, wow. What's more valuable than money? No. Their brain.
go ahead.
Huh?
That's an OG.
Listen to me. What's more valuable than their money? Their brain.
Yeah.
Why? Because their mind generated the money.
That's game.
So if you know what they know, you can generate what they generate. It's just like baking a cake. If I show you the recipe to bake a cake, all you got to do is follow that same recipe. You're going to get the exact same cake.
Yeah.
As long as you keep it in the oven just the same amount of time. Now, don't keep it in there 10 minutes longer because you might burn that thing.
Yeah.
Don't take it out early.
Yeah.
Don't put extra milk or eggs or whatever the ingredients, the flour. Put just like the ingredients say, you're going to get the exact same cake.
Yeah.
So what I said is, why not use their brain?
Yeah.
No, let them keep their money.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that you're good with networking then.
Oh, I love networking.
Yeah.
I'm a networking fool.
Which is why you're big on respect. So, hold on, yeah, come on, man. It's like, come on, drop that game. So, all right, when you're networking, what's like the first thing? Like, let's just say people skills. Because, you know.
Listen.
Okay.
Listen.
Listen more than you speak, right?
Listen more than you speak.
Okay.
Because if you're talking and they can't talk, and if they talking and you talking, you can't hear what they said.
Right. They say you can't transmit and receive.
So I'm big on listening.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
I like to do my talking too.
Yeah.
You know. But when I'm around people who are spitting game, I listen.
Gotcha.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm good at copying people.
Yeah.
You know, somebody say, don't be no copycat. Well, my man said, make sure you're copying the right cat.
I once heard Shaq say, like, this is at the time when I was doing music. He was like, whatever you do, do a remix. Like, what you saw, throw your spin on there, but make it better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Same scenario.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we copy somebody, copy the right cat. Because you're going to be copying somebody. Everything that we know, everything that we know, we learned from somebody.
Speaking of learning, you're an author. First off, let me say this. I know that you couldn't read as a kid.
Yes, I didn't know how to read till I was 28.
Wow. So how did you, what made you get into, like, reading?
Well, I was in prison, and they told me that I was never going home again.
Yeah.
And there was some old cats, you know what I'm saying, that was, you know, jailhouse lawyers, and they was like, man, you count on your lawyer to get you out?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I got a good lawyer, man. He went to Harvard University, top of his class, and I'm paying him well. He's like, man, that dude got kids. I was like, yeah. You think he care more about you than his kids? I was like, nah, I know better than that. He got a wife? Yeah, he got a wife, man. You think he care more about you than his wife? I was like, nah. He got a practice? I said, yeah, he got his own law firm. You think he care more about you than his law firm? I was like, nah, he ain't gonna risk his law firm for me. He got other clients too, don't he? Now, he might care more about you than his other clients, but he don't care more about you than all his other clients put together. You're right. They're like, so you think he wants you out of jail better than you should want yourself out of jail? And I was like, no, you're right.
Yeah.
I better get on my studies. So I went to work, you know. My study made me some cue cards so I could learn how to read. I got me a brand new dictionary, one of them nice, pretty ones, and I like to have it around. And everybody would come and, man, let me see your dictionary.
Yeah.
And I was highlighting it, and first book I ever read was Malcolm X. And when I read Malcolm X's book, I saw that he couldn't read either. So then I felt kind of good, like, damn, Malcolm X, one of the baddest dudes that ever lived, and he couldn't read either. He taught himself how to read in jail. And then when I was reading the book, he talked about, if you lock us up, we're going to learn how to read and write. So I saw myself in Malcolm, you know, so he kind of like gave me courage to like, to go forward, to go hard. And I saw that I could do what Malcolm did, you know, and I just went to work, man. But that's how I started reading.
Okay. So then you start writing books.
Yeah.
You're a legit author, man.
Yeah, man. It was the book came about because all the youngsters used to come to me and ask me for game, you know. They was going home. Because, you know, when you're in federal prison, you're going to be in there with a guy who might be going home in 6 months.
Yeah.
And a guy with a life sentence might be in the same dorm, you know, might be living in the same space. So these youngsters used to come to me all the time, and they would be like, Rick, man, I never made $10,000 selling drugs. How was you able to make so much money? And I would just give them game, you know, like, look, man, I took all my money and reinvested it back into my sack.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want a car.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted a bigger sack.
Yeah.
You know, I started working to get a pound. I started with an eighth. I had 125. My partner had 125. So we started with an eight, what we call the eight track.
Yeah.
And from the eight track, I wanted to get a seven. And from the seven, I wanted to get a half ounce. And then I wanted to get an ounce. And I just wanted to get bigger.
Right.
And I kept pooling all my money. Only money that I would take out was money that I was eating off of.
Yeah.
And I told him that was really my secret to being successful. And later on, I learned that they call that compound interest.
Right.
You know, where you compounding your money back into the business. Then when I read Richest Man in Babylon, he said specifically that you're supposed to take that money out for yourself, you know, every time. Don't spend all your money on things that will be soon forgotten, I think is his correct word.
Okay.
You know, like you buy a pair of shoes, you wear them for a year and they gone, and you throw them away, you forgot all about them. to take your money and buy things that you can remember.
Yes.
You know, things that's going to last,
yes,
things that's going to be around, it's going to hold value.
Yes.
And that's basically what I did in the cocaine business, but unconsciously did it. So now I can consciously do those things because I know that these are the things that I should be doing.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I try to lace these dudes. You know, I spoke at the high school the other day, and a lot of the kids, they saw me on Vlad TV, so they was like, man, I saw you on Vlad. And I said, did you hear me when I told Vlad the only reason I talked to him is because y'all listen?
Because
if he wasn't teaching, he wasn't allowing me to teach y'all. Because really, I should have a reality show right now. They should.
I see you going casting.
I am. I'm starting one. But I should have been had it. Really, we should have documented my whole journey since I got out of prison. I mean, it was a hell of a journey. You know, Floyd Mayweather picked me up from the halfway house. Yeah, so you're talking about it's been a journey that we could have got a lot of lessons from. It's been a lot of lessons lost. And that's kind of like this book, The 21 Keys.
Yeah.
The 21 Keys is kind of like those journeys.
Yeah.
Cody rode with me every day.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Cody rode with me every day, and he took notes, you know, of my journey. But I just wondering how much better it would have been if it would have been on film, you know. Because people love film more so than they like to read a book. But these books are definitely treasures. And I just shake my head that people are really slipping on these books because when I wrote these books, I was trying to let them into my head. You know, I wanted them to know my mindset. Like I told you before, will you take the money or the brain?
That's the biggest gem that...
Well, you know, in The Richest Man in Babylon, he talks about it. He has a story where his father sends his son out to be a man.
Yeah.
And he gives him two bags of gold, and he gives him some clay tablets. And when the son comes back, the son gives him back his two bags of... No, he gave him back three bags of gold. And he said, for the clay tablets, I'm going to give you six bags of gold because this is how much more I value your wisdom over your money. So basically what this kid was telling his dad was that your wisdom was six times more valuable to me than your gold was. And it's so important that we learn that because sometimes the only thing we're after is the money. And I'm saying, get the wisdom. The money will come. I tease people sometimes. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I say, you know, when I go and do a deal, I had the money right here, and then I had that bat right here. So if you don't take that money, I'm going to put that bat on you. I'm working on some major marijuana deals right now, and I'm gonna put this bat on them. If they don't take this money, I'm gonna put that bat on them. So we have to be in a position of power, you know. So often we work from a position of weakness instead of a position of strength, and I want our people to become powerful and strong. And you know, I hate yesterday. You know, when I spoke to the kids, I should have ended it with, come and help me.
Okay.
I need help.
Yeah.
You know, will you help me? Will you come and be a part of this movement and show the world that we can do anything?
Yeah, nah, that's real. Yeah. So then, do you think down the road, do you think you ever do like an online master class anyway?
I want to do that. I want to do an online master class. Or a TV show. Matter of fact, I'm talking to a network right now, Impact Network.
Okay.
I'm going to meet with the owner, and maybe he'll let me set something up like that. I have been trying I got all the way to the president of BET with the show too, where I was going to be taking kids that was about to go to jail, and the judge would give them one more chance and let them come and work with us, and I help them get their life back together. And BET dropped it at the last minute. Said, oh, no, it's too serious.
Too positive. that's the one thing I don't understand. But then that's where we come in. We take over. Like you said, we do our own thing.
Yeah, we got to. Mm-hmm. We can't count on other people to look out for us. You know, just like I couldn't count on my lawyer. My lawyer, when I found the issue that eventually got me out of prison, the lawyer who went to Harvard said I was wrong. If I would have listened to him, I would still be sitting in prison right now. Just luckily that I had enough confidence in myself and my reading ability and my understanding of the law that I said, no, put it on the record. Because he didn't even want to put it on the record. And if you don't put it on the record, you can't appeal it. Man, I mean, you know, what y'all got to realize is when you hear me talk, you're hearing a guy with less than the second or third grade education going by the school system. You know, if you went to my records, they would say that I was retarded. And when you hear me talk right now, I know I don't sound retarded no more.
Oh, man, you're like, literally, you're the wisest guy I've met. Man, that's same forever, you know, other than that, it's my dad, you know, like, this is not me just, like, talking.
So you ain't stroking me.
Bro, I'm mind blown right now, like, I'm sitting here in shock and literally just like, man, it's a lot that you can learn. Like you said, like the brain, it's literally like, I want to be next to you, Mr. Ross. Like,
well, you know, our brain is our most valuable asset.
Yeah.
And so often that we forget how powerful the human brain is. I mean, the brain sends rocket ships out of space.
Yeah. And even then, like, we build the computers. And even like with AI, I'm pretty sure you're aware of it. With AI, like, as much as it, people deem it as a danger to us, we can still outthink that.
Yeah.
We put our minds to it.
Absolutely.
You know, and so that's, I don't know, Mr. Ross, like, yo, you, man, you dropping some gems.
Well, you know, I just wanted to share, you know, some things with you. You know, you're a young brother, and I feel that my wisdom could also assist you one day.
It will, in
your journey.
Look, I got the book yesterday. And I'm going to apply this, you know, literally.
And you should. You should check out its plausibility.
Yeah, plausibility. Yes, sir.
You should check its plausibility to see it.
Yeah.
Is he lying or what?
No.
I want to know.
Yeah.
I want no, but you should want to know.
Yeah.
Is he lying?
Yeah.
Is he telling the truth?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so often though, and we take other people at face value.
Yeah.
You know, they tell us something, and we believe that shit.
Yeah.
And and we support them.
Yeah. And that's only because we too lazy to, like, you know,
to do the research.
Yeah. No, that's crazy. And even then, so it's like, I don't know, man. Like, Mr. Ross, you keep coming with content. So, like, what's in the, like, in the near future? What other things do you got going on?
Well, you know, my main thing right now, the low-hanging fruit, is the marijuana industry.
Yeah.
I think I got the deal worked out last night with the company that's gonna do the do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They gonna take the cash.
Yeah.
So they don't feel that they're not gonna get the wrath, but it's gonna be a bunch of them that have to feel the wrath.
Yeah.
I'm gonna keep touring with my book.
Yeah. How many press media like companies have you went to over the past few days? Because I know your hustle is intense.
Man, I just left Oakland.
Yeah.
You know, I did about 8 or 9 in Oakland.
So, like, with your energy, do you do any coffee?
No, I don't do coffee. I'm on vitamin D right now. I'm also studying with the brain surgeon right now. So, don't be surprised if you see me in the surgery room one day doing brain surgery.
Oh, man. No, that's dope, man.
Yeah. I'm putting together a thing right now with one of the top brain surgeons in the world. He also thinks that he's going to be the one to come up with the cure for... what's the name of this disease? Coronavirus?
Really?
Yeah, he thinks he's going to be the one.
Wow.
He says that he can kill anything.
Man, that's crazy. Speaking of the coronavirus, yesterday, man, I hopped on Twitter, and I see the CDC. A way to avoid getting the coronavirus. Guess what they want us to do?
What's that?
I'm not making this up. They want us to shave our beard. In order to avoid getting the coronavirus. This is something they literally tweeted.
What does a beard have to do with?
In my head, I go, is this overhyped? You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, matter of fact, we talked yesterday, me and the doc and one of my other partners was on the phone yesterday talking about it, and he said that the coronavirus is definitely a disease that nobody really knows about yet.
Really?
It has some components that they never saw. You know, he says it has like claws on it.
Okay.
Where it sticks to your body.
Okay.
It grabs you.
Yeah.
And it holds itself to you.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a disease that nobody really knows about. And he said it's going to probably be a pandemic.
Wow. Yeah, and I'm hearing that too. It's crazy. But I don't know, man. I'm just like, if anything, you got like, it's making me more of a germaphobe in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm catching myself washing my hands more than I usually do, and even like more showers. But then, so, yeah, it seemed like you're getting heavily into the medical field, if anything.
Yeah, I am. I mean, well, you know, the goal is to help the people. You know, it's not really to make money. I mean, I want to make money. I need money to pay my bills.
Yeah.
But
you're pro the people first.
But I'm pro the people first.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't, if I came up with a vaccine, a doc come up with a vaccine and I had something to do with it, it wouldn't be where he would be gouging. You know, I wouldn't, definitely would not be happy with gouging the people.
Yeah.
You know, I would definitely want it to be distributed, you know, fairly,
yeah,
and equally, you know. Yes.
Yeah.
So, and I'm hoping that I'm the one that helps him put this facility together. He doesn't, right now, he has a vitamin D that he created that clears the mind from old times, how you pronounce it, autism.
Yeah, yeah.
The boxers. He got in touch with me because he saw me working with boxers.
Yeah, yeah.
So he reached out to me.
Yeah.
He saw me with the boxers. So he reached out to me. He said, you know, I can help your boxers.
Yeah.
And I was like, what you mean? He said, you know how they be slurring and punch drunk and whatnot. He said, I can clear their head up. I can get all those black spots out their brain. And I was like, what? And so I jumped on a plane the next morning and went and met with him. And we sit down and he bought me lunch and we talked and he told me about some of his concerns and some of the ways that this system has treated him.
Yeah.
You know, he's a black man, so
yeah,
he felt that the system hasn't treated him fairly.
Yeah.
You know, he's come up with things and they've taken them from him. And I mean, kind of like me, you know.
Yeah.
They took my name.
Yeah.
You know, they took my story.
Yeah.
You know, the TV show Snowfall, that's about my life.
Yeah.
Number one TV show on TV. I'm not getting a dime from it.
Yeah.
Not even a consultant credit.
Yeah. Speaking of which, like, the impact that you have had on culture, do you watch these things happen? Do you care about it at all?
Kind of, you know, I mean, I feel flattered,
yeah,
you know, to have had such an impact on society. But now I want to have a positive. I want my grandkids to be able to say, yeah, my granddad, he sold cocaine for a little while.
Yeah.
You know, just for a little while. But look at all the other stuff he did.
Yeah.
When the coronavirus hit the world, he was one of the ones that helped stop it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Could you imagine how my grandkids would feel if they was able to say that?
Yeah.
You know, like, my granddad was a part of that.
Yeah.
So, those are the kind of things that I want to do right now.
Yeah.
You know, those are the things that I want to be remembered for, you know. And you know, I know they're going to probably throw up the cocaine, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, he sold drugs.
Yeah. That's the haters, though. They only going to focus on the negative.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking at what you're doing right now, and I'm like, I'm just amazed because I'm like, as an OG, like, you literally, like, I know your work ethic. You probably put in 100 hours a week minimum.
Probably so, or maybe more.
Yeah. But, like, for me, man, I'm looking at things now because I'm like, I just want to increase my work ethic. And, you know, that's one of the things, like, you spoke on.
And you got to enjoy it.
Gotcha.
You know, when you enjoy it, then you don't want to, you don't want to end it.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah.
You know, you want to just keep going. Like,
yeah,
this is it.
Yeah.
You know, this is my ultimate high.
It drives you in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So what other things you got your hands on as well?
Oh, you know, I got my clothing on.
This
is my clothing line. Yeah. Feel the material.
Hey, dude, that's hella nice.
Yeah. So I'm planning on bringing, like, top quality clothes.
Yeah.
With a rock bottom prices.
Hey.
I mean, the same thing I did in the drug business. You know, I wanted to have the best cocaine I could get.
Yeah.
And sell it to them as cheap as I could sell it to them.
Yes.
So I'm doing that. I got the clothes going on. I still do my motivational speaking. Oh, they can get it at my website, FreeRickyRoss.com. Also, you can get the book. You can get the both the books. You can get both the books there. I also do cars. I got a car lot. I sell cars. What else am I doing? Oh, the movie. I'm working on the movie right now. We've been wrestling with the script for about 3 years.
Yeah.
Because I want it to be, I want this story to be told the correct way.
Yeah.
I don't want no more snowfall bullshit out, you know, where they glamorizing and making it look good and not giving people the facts.
Yeah.
I want kids to be able, when a kid read this book and he's thinking about getting into the drug business, he's going to know exactly what he's getting into.
Yeah.
He's going to know the ins and outs, what's going to happen at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of times they think at the end of the rainbow is a rap record.
Yeah.
You know, with Universal or Def Jam is going to sign you.
Yeah.
You know, so I want him to know,
yeah,
you know, that it could be some handcuffs, some cufflinks,
yeah,
you know, at the end of the rainbow for you.
Yeah.
So I'm doing that. What else am I doing? I'm working on 2 reality shows. The boxing.
Yeah. How many hours of sleep do you get, man?
I get about 4 most days. 4.
You like? So I'm assuming that you're a part of the marijuana industry. You obviously smoke, but then do you?
I eat.
You eat good.
I don't eat no alcohol.
Yeah.
No alcohol. I never drunk. You know, every now and then I have an occasional drink, maybe twice a year. You know, I might drink some champagne, a little wine. But no, not a drinker.
Yeah.
You know, drinking killed too many of my uncles and cousins and so forth. So, no, I'm not a drinker at all. And the only vitamins I'm taking right now is vitamin D.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm a vegan, though. You know, I've been a vegan for 30 years. I found out I didn't need meat to live.
But then, they come to you with that idea, like, hey, you should try this?
One of my friends, he made me a bet that I couldn't do it for 6 months.
$100. $100, really?
Yeah, he made me a $100 bet that I couldn't do it. I won the $100. I spent that $100. and when I went back to eat meat, I got sick.
Gotcha.
So
I might as well stay on the path.
Might as well stay where I'm at.
Yeah.
I'm getting everything I need. I don't feel any different.
Yeah.
And he gave me a book too called Do You Live to Eat or Eat to Live?
Okay.
And in that book, I saw that there was people that wanted me to eat meat who really didn't care about me.
Gotcha. And that's the main, that's the corporate. Yeah, that's crazy, man. So, do you think, cause by you being in health, do you ever think you would do a food product?
Oh, I definitely want to do food products.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, everything that they do, I want to have a part in it. Because we should have alternatives.
Yeah.
You know, we should have choices.
Yeah. And even I grew up in Detroit. So growing up in the hood, you just you don't know.
You don't know your choices.
Yeah.
If you don't know you have choices, then you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
And if you never exercise your choice, then you don't have a choice.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope y'all listening. This man is giving game. He's giving it casually.
I try to, man. But we have to exercise our choices, you know. If you smoke cigarettes and you think that you could quit or you don't need cigarettes, then you have to try one day.
Yeah.
You know, and see if you can quit.
That's one of my things now. I'm for me, it's drinking. I'm going to tap out, you know. My goal is to do, literally, my birthday is May 9th. So the goal is just to, tap out, man. And by then, I want to.
You tapped out already?
I made up my mind.
Today?
Today, I made up my mind,
yes,
sir. Yep.
Why leave something for tomorrow that you could do today?
Hey, that's procrastination side.
You can't be a procrastinator. My man in The Richest Man in Babylon, he said, procrastination has killed so many men's dreams.
Yeah. Nah, seriously. And I can see it, man. And even then, even listening to you talk, it's I picture you a go-getter. Whatever you see, that interests you.
I go for it. I don't wait.
Yeah.
Why wait?
Yeah.
Why wait till tomorrow?
Yeah. And so, like, what's that, what's, like, the next big thing that you're, like, totally, like, because I know it's a big goal in mind.
Well, I mean, working with the doc is big.
Yeah.
You know, he's talking about helping people with old timers, with football players, with the black spots.
Yeah.
And then if he comes up with a cure for this coronavirus,
yeah.
I mean, that stuff is like, you really can't get no bigger than that.
Yeah, not
you
for
know,
not
but I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if people see me maybe on a basketball team or
yeah.
football team or something like that there. I could see those things. So maybe, I don't know, maybe I buy Apple or Microsoft too.
Yeah.
You know, while I'm buying stuff, I just might go and buy those companies up as well. Because I study corporate takeovers. So I want to take over a couple of big companies
yeah.
just to show people, look, man, this game is it's like playing Monopoly, man. It's all fake. They just keep printing it. You know, that money don't really have no value. No way.
So, wrapping it up, if you could give people 5 things to walk away with, game-wise.
I'm going to give them some straight game.
Okay.
Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. As a Man Think by James Allen. Richest Man in Babylon by George Clasie. Freeway Rick Ross, Untold Autobiography.
Yeah.
Ricky Ross, 21 Keys to Success. Go get them.
Get that, y'all. Man, I appreciate you giving me the time, the opportunity. Like,
I'm glad to see you wrote it, man. I like to see young brothers getting it, man. And I hope that I'll be able to mentor you and you mentor me.
I'm gonna stay in touch, brother. You better believe
it's
it.
It's a sharp mind sharpening each other.
Yeah, it's been, like you said, the brain. Like, really,
yeah.
I want to
let him keep his
brain.
Money.
Yeah.
Keep your money. I don't want your money. I'm gonna give you some money.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give you some money.
Yeah.
I want that brain.
Yeah. No, for sure. Mr. Ross, where can people follow you at?
They can follow me at Freeway Ricky on all social media. I'm trying to hit that 200,000 mark right now, so go check me out. Yeah, I'm going to hit it anyway. It's that thing starting to grow, and the internet ain't caught up with me yet. See, I got the internet tricked.
Yeah.
I'm running the trick on the internet, and they don't even know yet.
Yeah.
I've been at a thing that I've been doing since I've been home. It's taking pictures with random people, just anybody.
Yeah.
Because what I peeped out is that the stars don't take pictures with common folk.
Yeah.
They don't want to be around you. That's why they don't date you.
Yeah.
You know, they always date you. Look at it. Look who they date. They date each other.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm dating this one because he raps, and I'm dating her because she's a singer. And
yeah.
I date him because she's a movie star and she's a singer. But they don't just go out and date common folk.
Yeah.
And there's some nice looking, smart, intelligent people who walk the streets
yeah.
every day. They just never had a break.
Yeah.
You know, nobody never gave them that break.
Seriously.
So that don't make you a bad person because you never had the break.
Yeah.
But so often our people put themselves in these classes and they don't...
It's like limited in the way, limited thinking.
Absolutely.
So it's like you exposing people to different platforms, different levels.
Absolutely.
What you're capable of.
Absolutely.
I love that, man. Like, you don't have to do that, and yeah, you're doing it.
I love it, though.
Yeah.
I love to see that light bulb come on in the head. Like, be y'all, oh, I got it now.
Yeah, nah, that's so dope, man, because it's literally, like, for me personally, I'm like, sky's the limit.
Sky's the limit. Why put a limit on yourself?
That's just not being open.
Yeah, Bill Gates ain't no smarter than you. I mean, his daddy was a patent lawyer, you know, who knew how to patent ideas and,
yeah.
and so forth. And so somebody came to him with an idea,
yeah.
you know, and he took it to his daddy and got it patented.
Yeah, no, seriously. And that's all about who you're around at that point. It goes back to what you were saying earlier. You got to be around the right people.
Come on, y'all. Come on.
It's a lot of game, man. Y'all better peep it.
I love y'all.
Hey, so thank you, Mr. Ross. This is the Stimulated Podcast, the Content Creator Podcast, where we stimulate your mind and we show you how to grind. Take notes, follow Mr. Ross, follow me at I Am Alex J. Martin, and follow the podcast at The Content Creator Podcast. That's on all platforms. Thank you.
Peace.
Be a player, but your wheels ain't flying. You gotta hit us up. to get a pimped out ride. Be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You gotta hit us up to get a pimped out ride. Damn right. So you wanna be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You gotta hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
Since 2007, more than 50% of the world's population have been living in cities. They are the powerhouse of our global economy.
People keep talking about how the world is going to come to an end. And I wonder, in these days and these times, if anybody... People keep talking about how society is falling down today. And as hard as I try not to listen just to what them folks got to say, but you know, I just can't help but look around and see we digging our own grave. And there's just one thing I want to know. Can anybody be saved? Can anybody be saved? Anybody be saved? Can anybody gonna be saved? Why don't you save me? Save me, Lord. Save me, Lord. Can anybody be saved? Well.
Gonna be saved.